This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Sliding through the week in Ireland. Hey everybody, Kate Delaney as I broadcast from Castle Dargan, which is famous in many ways for an inspiration of one of the W.B. Yeats poems, who, of course, won a Nobel Prize, if you remember, the famous Irish poet who wrote hundreds and hundreds of poems and is very, very well known, certainly to the world, but in the in the area that I am, Sligo's, where he's from and where many, many of the points of interest in the city relate back to Yeats. We're going to talk to one of the foremost authorities on everything Yeats coming up in just a little while here on the show. And, you know, it's interesting, and I'm thinking about things that are happening in the world, and I was sitting here today and looking at his epitaph, which reads, "Cast a cold eye on life, on death, horsemen pass by." There's some food for thought, huh? We're going to get to the what I call the hits that everybody's talking about in your backyard and mine in just a second. But, what a day in Ireland, from Sligo to where I was before that. Grace O'Malley, the famous pirate queen who was internationally known from the 1500s. In fact, I read a book called The Pirates of the Caribbean, not like the movie, a different kind of pirates in the Caribbean. And she was one of the characters that was talked about, who definitely had her reign on the waterways. And she certainly did in a place called Westport, where she had five castles around Western Ireland. And I was in her dungeon earlier in the day. So how crazy is that? And while I'm here, I'm also thinking about Brexit, because Brexit has got people in Ireland a little bit nervous. Brexit is happening in, 8 days. And what does that mean for the people of Ireland, especially when they're split? Even the money, I talked about having money exchanged, and I'm now sliding away from the euros into pounds because, of course, that's Northern Ireland is considered part of the EU and, of course, Britain. And then when you go in the other direction, you are talking about euros. So isn't it wild to think that Brexit will have such an impact, perhaps even on tourism here? And this is what really concerns the people. And as I'm here touring and bringing back to you a taste of Ireland and filling your heart with Ireland, I'm thinking people that rely on tourism are worried, and rightfully so, because how can you know what the effects of Brexit will be? And the answer is, we don't know. Something on my mind also, and many of yours, because you've sent me emails about it. In fact, we're going to go to the mailbag coming up, is this situation with Boeing. And I was reading a story today about it. Boeing responded to the preliminary report, but what a blow for Boeing. The situation's not good. That Ethiopian plane that went down, you think of the lives that have been lost in these MAX accidents, and the pilots on board, what happened as, you know, disaster struck, and on board the Ethiopian Airlines, they were battling the automated flight control system for almost the entire duration of the 6-minute flight. That's what the preliminary report into the crash is saying. The captain and the first officer struggled mightily to do what they could on this 737 MAX 8 system. And the idea with that is it's designed to prevent the plane from stalling, but repeatedly force the nose of the plane down for six terrifying minutes. The pilots worked through a series of procedures to try to get control of the plane, and they couldn't do it. So the problems on that Ethiopian jet mirrored those, as we already know, from the Lion Air Flight 610, which had the same model and crashed in October. Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg on Thursday afternoon said the company was sorry for the lives lost in the 737 crash and said that the tragedies continue to weigh heavily on their hearts and minds, and they extend their sympathies to the loved ones of the passengers and crew on board the Lion Air flight and Ethiopian flight as well. But that doesn't explain what the problem, again, with the system. So the findings make it pretty clear that the MCA's system pushed the plane into a dive that, of course, was fueled by a strange or erroneous, is a better way to say it, angle of the attack sensor reading. Sounds like a mouthful, right? It's pretty simple. They tried to do what they could. They tried to pull the nose up together to keep the plane flying, but they couldn't regain the control. And in total, the anti-stall system just crammed the nose down four times during the flight, and then it led to the crash. Very sad. And it is, I'll tell you, the findings, when you look at it, what a blow to, you know, the accident, the disaster and the accident investigators and what they're saying. No damage to the aircraft sensors. So that is a blow, big time blow to Boeing. And now we know that this is something that could really be put on the shelf. I mean, I can't say that for sure, but the conclusion of the Ethiopian aviation deal is that, you know, this preliminary report is this disaster, along with the same type of jet in October that crash, you know, what we learned is looking at the software played a role in the crash. So the anti-stall software, the maneuvering, as I said, the maneuvering characteristics augmentation system, the MCAs, is under suspicion. And they've got these systems in, and it's suspected as the main reason for these crashes. Not good for Boeing, but certainly it's more about safety and who's getting on that plane, with especially if that's what they're saying. So it's a huge mess for Boeing and certainly for the families. I mean, what a sad, awful thing, that's for sure. All right, jumping around to something else that's on my mind is, remember the boys that were rescued from that Thai cave and how they had to find their way out? Remember, we were like, everybody was following this story because you think, wow, what would you do? Your kid's off on this scouting adventure and then they can't get out of this cave and, oh, it's awful and they could drown. Well, the medics who treated the 12 boys and their soccer coach rescued from that cave in Thailand last year credit the drug ketamine with playing a role in the dangerous mission to try to extract them. They're saying that they were given the ketamine, it's Special K, when the rescue divers were taking them out of the cave to keep them calm, and apparently it was a way for them not to be panicky. It's interesting because ketamine is now becoming a drug that's being used to treat depression. And I have some familiarity with Special K because of people I know struggling with serious depression. And there is a different feeling in taking it. It definitely relaxes you. So I say this was, you know, they're alive and safe. And they're questioning them using it because they had the full face mask and whatnot. But I say if it's the way to get them out and they're alive, and he got to cut him some slack. All right, we're going to dive into the mailbag that's coming up around the bend.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I own a kennel. We train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat that so much important nutrition is just cooked right out of it. But adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids,
flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa, the digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite
is nutrition.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E.
Dynavite's the bomb.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E.com.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
It's time to start drinking Tahibo Tea. Tahibo Tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo Tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Every week, someone calls in with the story of another miraculous recovery. Order your Tahibo Tea now for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Call today 818-883-7222. Again, 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. All orders ship the same day. Call now 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com.
Let's dig in the mailbag.
Once again, one of my favorite segments here on the show has to be the mailbag. Oh, the amount of mail that we have gotten about Boeing is incredible, and it's because we've talked about how scary it is, and you have the CEO who is accepting blame for the two plane crashes, apologizes, basically says, hey, we own it. That doesn't bring back the people who tragically died, and I think that definitely tripped a nerve with a lot of people who fly, and many of you who listen to this show are people who fly, frankly. So on that note, let's go to the mailbag, and that's where we're going to start. This one is from Christy, who says, Kate, I like that the fact that the chairman of Boeing owned up or acknowledged or addressed for the first time that this maneuvering system that's new was responsible for the two plane crashes that killed, I don't know, over 300 people, but how can you feel safe, I don't know, getting into that plane again no matter what they do? And I realize that flying is safer than walking across the street, essentially, but the fact that they had this effort and put this, you know, put this system in the plane, and then it brought one plane down, it looks like, and then it brought another plane down, I don't know, pretty scary to me. Pretty scary is, you know, putting it lightly. Absolutely, Christy. So a report comes out that recommends that the flight control system should be reviewed by Boeing, and that aviation folks have to verify the system before the aircraft is released to operation. But I'm going to go back again to how do you have that sense of calm even in fixing this? With these nosedive conditions, how do you have a sense of calm over the flying public by telling them, oh, don't, we've tweaked the MCA's functions and we can work on this? And yes, faulty things happen, that kind of stuff. And of course, the CEO of Boeing said it's our responsibility to eliminate the risk. We own it. We know how to do it. But by saying that, we know how to do it, we own it, that the chain of events that caused that, then, I mean, it happened, but it shouldn't have happened. 157 people died in that Ethiopian jet, including some Americans. And, you know, they performed all the procedures recommended by the aerospace company, but failed to gain control of the doomed plane. That is what I think is so horrible. So the CEO, Dennis Muhlenberg, I think his name is, said in that videotape statement that he posted on Twitter, we're sorry for the loss of lives. And of course, that's what he has to do. But the fact that they followed the procedures and that didn't work. So not pilot error, a mechanism error that's supposed to correct the nosediving. Ooh, but it's a whole different animal, I think. 100%. Okay, let's move to this one. This one is from Jack, and Jack says, ugh, Kate, the Democrats announcing that they're running for president. It's kind of like Hollywood Squares on steroids, only they're politicians. Doesn't this defeat the purpose? What do you think? I saw something today about Tim Ryan being in. Is that true? Yes, it's true. He must be from Ohio. So he is talked about running for office. He made it official on Thursday. He's young. He's 45. And he said he felt like he needed to jump in the race after General Motors closed its Lordstown assembly plant last month. He said his daughter called him in tears because her friend's dad was being transferred out of state and said, you have to do something. So he said, I'm going to run for president. The crowded field for the Democrats, I like your analogy about it's like Hollywood Squares, only for politicians. So, you know, who's Tim Ryan? He's a guy who's popular in Ohio. He was elected to Congress in 2002. He was an underdog candidate. And the people in Ohio, or some of the people in Ohio, seem to really back him up and like him. But you think of the other people with more national prominence, you know, running, and maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe he kicks butt on a campaign trail right away and somehow helps his, I don't know, somehow helps his, you know, push to run for, you know, make it his president, to get the nomination, in other words. Whoever gets the nomination, it's them and Donald Trump, unless some unforeseen thing happens. It's Trump. It's Trump and, you know, gazillion Democrats, and so far no one is really standing out, but I guess it is kind of early in the game. Speaking of the president, some of you had some things to say about Washington. I always say this show is about common sense. I'm the voice of reason. I don't care if you're left of left or right of right or somewhere in between. And here I am in Ireland, and boy, they like to talk about politics in Ireland because they're sweating out Brexit, as I mentioned at the top of the show. So the president, days after threatening to shutter the U.S. border, shut it down with Mexico, the president looks like it's a retreat situation. He's saying that his administration would slap tariffs on autos before it considered, you know, sealing the nation off from its southern neighbor. So he said, he was quoted as saying today, he told reporters in the Oval Office, I don't think that we'll ever have to close the border. So that's a big departure from the position that he threw out, where it's a good, very good likelihood that he would close the border this week. Because there was massive blowback, I think, from business groups, Republicans on the Hill, about that threat. It would disrupt the flow of about 1.5 billion in trade. And so that's the other part of it that wasn't being talked about. But the sharp statement, you know, set off alarm bells and led to a little bit of panic. And during a trip to Florida last Friday, he warned, that's what he said, he warned there was a very good likelihood he would close the border if Mexico didn't do more to stem the influx of migrants coming in from Central America. So now that positioning has changed, which I'm sure makes plenty of the people who were a little bit nervous on the Hill feel somewhat better that he's backed out, or he's not backed out, but he's backed down off of the hardcore position, because when those kind of statements come out, that's when the constituents light up the phone, go absolutely crazy, and that overtakes the conversation. That overtakes what you're saying in your backyard and what, you know, what's being said in my backyard. And I suppose that's, you know, that's the name of the game, especially when you're talking about people who get affected by that and you're talking about money. I mean, what do we all fear? What do we jump from? I say it all the time. What's in your wallet? What a brilliant advertising campaign, and you could apply it to anything. What's in your wallet, and is your government taking it away from you? And when you're talking about big business, they're going to jump out, and they're jumping out at the people on the Hill, and that's part of, I'm sure, the reason why that's been a little bit of a turnaround. And then I got this one from Jake, and he said, wow, Joe Biden, with so many people in the race and yet another person declaring today on the Democratic side, he just needs to sit down, sit that booty in a chair and hang out with the great grandkids, because all these allegations of unwanted, brutal, inappropriate behavior just keep flowing the Biden way, Kate. Don't you think if you were the leader of the Democratic Party, you would tell him that he might consider stepping away? Well, now there's more allegations and of inappropriate behavior. And Biden, who's considering a bid for the White House, says his touching was all about making a human connection. He said, it's who I am. I've never thought of politics as cold or antiseptic. And a video comes out. The Washington Post reports allegations from three more women, including a former White House intern who said Biden got very close to her face and called her a pretty girl. He says his close contact is a way of showing people he cares. He said, I've tried to be me in my career. I've always tried to make a human connection. It's my responsibility. I shake hands. I hug people. I grab men and women by the shoulders and say, you can do this. Biden said in a video that he posted to Twitter, because he felt like he had to respond, it's the way I've always been. It's the way I've tried to show I care about them and I'm listening. So then it brings up the whole thing about, I know what some people, if you look at that at face value, or what he's saying, there is truth to people who do that, who give an attaboy or whatever, and it goes back to that thing again, now that we live in this era of trying to dissect what you can and can't do, and he's caught right in the middle of it. But, you know, is there one or two situations that are serious, is or what? And the answer is, you know, we don't know. So let's see if he even runs. Thanks for all the emails. Hang with us. I'm taking it to Ireland next.
Hey, everyone. Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com. And enter promo code radio. You heard right. Proactive MD plus free shipping and a free gift. The new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95 and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now. 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. Again, go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
U.S. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Christian Nielsen has been battered by Democrats for separating families and criticized by President Trump for not being tough enough. She is now resigned. The president visited the border in Calexico, California on Friday, along with Nielsen. In a roundtable discussion, Nielsen tried to soften the image of border agents facing a steady flow of asylum seekers trying to get from Mexico into the United States.
We've already seen over 100 groups of over 100 people, which is 100 people reaching our border at one time that the Border Patrol goes and picks up, and they're being very, as usual, humble. They also say thousands of people.
But a softer image is not what President Trump wants now. Last week, he withdrew a nominee for Immigration and Customs Enforcement Administrator, saying he would prefer someone tougher. Kevin McAleenan, Commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, will become the acting secretary. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the capitalist evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground-floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Tell you how much William Butler Yeats had an effect on my life. My father was a poet and a writer and died really right when I turned 8. But he expressed that to me. I have all his books and I knew how important he was. So it's a thrill for me to be here in Sligo and be sitting with Damian Brennan. And you've got to check him out at the Yeats Experience, and we're going to give you the address and all that kind of stuff. But thank you so much for joining us and for the lovely talk we had here just moments ago, and your fantastic poetry reading of some of his key poems.
It's great fun to have a passion for your county and for your place, and then to have that matched with world class words, and to have to be able to bring the two together to people who may never have heard of Yeats. Many of your listeners won't have heard of Yeats, but Y-E-A-T-S. But you know, he ranks there with your American poet T.S. Eliot, and comes a little after Walt Whitman and Robert Frost, but only in time, because he actually stands out as the greatest poet of his age.
And the significance of Yeats when he was alive was recognized, obviously, because of the Nobel Prize, etc. And was he this? Did he walk down the streets of Sligo and was a revered person once he had hit that status?
Well, by the time he hit that status, his interests had moved to Coole Park and the Galway area, where Lady Gregory, his great mentor, lived. But what is actually true is that when his body was repatriated, he died in 1939 in the south of France, and his body was buried there and only brought back to Ireland after the war. And the whole of Sligo in 1948, which was a very poor, less educated place than today, the whole of the town closed down, and they did walk behind him and walked out to Drumcliff Churchyard, where he's buried, which is about 5-6 miles outside the town. And Life magazine had a whole series of photographs on it, and there's mothers pushing buggies in the rain out behind this man, because they did recognize how great he was and his contribution to Sligo.
And of course there's so many directions you could go in when you talk about his poetry, but for you personally, because you are such an authority on it and you are steeped in the knowledge of his life, his influences, etc., what's your favorite?
My favorite poem is the one called The White Birds, and he wrote it after being walking out on a Sunday afternoon on the Hill of Howth in Dublin, and with the great love of his life, Maud Gonne. And she said to him at the end of the day, give me a poem for today. He had yet again asked her to marry him, and yet again she had said no. And he wrote The White Birds, and just the very beginning of it is, "I would that we were, my beloved, white birds in the foam of the sea. We tire of the flame of the meteor before it can fade and flee. And the flame of the blue star of twilight hangs low on the edge of the air." And there you have it.
And there you go. There's some of it. Yeah,
some of it. Yeah.
So you talk about Maud, and for the people listening, you mentioned it's the great love of his life that he did not marry because she didn't want to marry him.
The great love of her life was a man called a Paris newspaper editor called Millevoix, with whom she had a son, Georges, who died when he was only 2 years of age. And then, 2 years after she met Yeats, she had or 2 years after Georges died, I should say, she had a daughter, Isolde. And Isolde Yeats played a major role as a grandfatherly figure in Isolde's life.
Wow. And so, and again, that goes to the fact that he had such love for her. And you mentioned this, that so many of his poems really reflected that love throughout his life.
All of his love poetry, which stands comparable with the love sonnets of Shakespeare, all of his love poetry is only always and forever for Maud Gonne. And when Maud unexpectedly became a Catholic and married a man called John McBride, and the marriage was a disaster, in Yeats's poem Easter 1916 he refers to that drunken, vain, glorious lout who has done great harm to some who are near my heart. And within a year and a day the marriage had ended, and not before they had a son. They had one son called Sean McBride, and who also went on, incidentally, to win the Nobel Prize, but for peace, not for literature. And Maud remained Catholic, even though she was separated, and as such wouldn't allow herself to consider second marriage. But in 1916, Sean McBride was an unlikely leader of the 1916 uprising in Dublin, and in the first week of May of that year he was executed for his part in it. On the first week of July of that year of 1916, Yeats fetches up to Maud Gonne's house in the south of France. Knock, knock, knock. "Maud, will you marry me?" And she says, "Don't be silly, Willie. I've told you 4 times already. I'm not marrying you." And he then asks her permission, which is when it all gets weird again, to woo Isolde. and he spends a year and a half wooing this 22-year-old. He's 48. But then, when he finally realizes that she's not going to marry him, and he is desperate to marry, he can now afford to be married. He's very, very concerned to find heirs, to leave Yeatses behind him. And his brother Jack had married but never had a family, so it was falling upon him to keep the name going, as it were. And he proposes to and marries a lady called Georgie Hyde Lees, and Esau is freed of his pursuit.
Wow, it's fascinating. We could just talk about his personality and of course his work and his influences. And you mentioned this already. His big mentor in life was a woman who had a massive influence, I would say, over him.
Lady Gregory.
Yeah.
Lady Gregory. He met in 1898, and while he was staying at the house of a Catholic landlord in the south of Galway, a man called Edward Martin, and Lady Gregory called for tea. And over the course of that summer, they conceived the idea of the Irish Literary Society, which in turn became the Abbey Theatre. And in December of 1904, the first Abbey Theatre play was put on in the Abbey Theatre in Dublin. And as some of your listeners will know, the Abbey Theatre is still our national theatre, our most important theatre in Ireland. But Lady Gregory, he was going to stay in her home for the next 19 summers. She was a widow, she was older than him, she wasn't ever a romantic issue with him, but she was a deep, deep friend that he nursed in her old age. She died in 1931, and he nursed her through cancer and greatly missed her.
Wow. How about the influence, besides his mentor, his influences when it came to the fairies and mysticism and what is so seeped into this country and so fascinating?
Well, I think there's two Yeatses. It's the 19th century Yeats and the 20th century Yeats, as I often say. But the 19th century Yeats, the one that was captured by the landscape we're sitting here in the Yeats country in Sligo on the northwest coast of Ireland, that was really fairy folk stuff. That was the she, which is might be understood to a point as being like the leprechaun. And the she were all pervasive in the lives of the Catholic Irish and the native Irish, and it's a very rich archaeology around here. So it becomes very, very inspiring for this young imaginative mind when he comes here on holidays from London as a teenager and so on. But then, after he meets Maud Gonne, the great love of his life, she's quite involved in the theosophical and spiritualism movements of Madame Blavatsky, Alistair Crowley, MacGregor Mathers in London. She's a member of a thing called the Order of the Golden Dawn, which she inducts Yeats into. And they go to Ouija board sessions, they go to seances, they go to automatic writing sessions, and it pervades their lives. And actually, they stayed very good friends even up to their old age, and they still wrote to each other and said things like, I had a tumultuous dream last night of a great ship or a bad storm or whatever. Did you have something similar? Because they were wondering about likeness of mind. So his early involvement, inspiration from this landscape turns into a lifelong interest in other worlds and a great belief in it. And then when he marries his wife Georgie, and he spent 5 years experimenting with automatic writing, which is to say, he poses the question, she writes it down, and depending who's channeling her from the other side, whether it's the bishop or Michael Robarts or Crazy Jane, there's all these personalities, the syntax changes, the handwriting changes, and it completely revitalizes his poetry. And so we find a 20th century prophetic voice emerging out of all this further interest in the other side. When she gave the papers to Cornell University in the 1960s, there were 3,500 handwritten pages, and when Cornell published it, it took 3 volumes to carry it. So, like, right up to the end, even to the end, he's still in this conversation with himself and with other worlds. And yet, with incredible irony, having never been a practicing Christian, he takes himself back to Drumcliff in the north of Sligo, to where his great grandfather had been the rector, and he takes himself back there to be reinterred after the war, and has himself placed in sacred ground with 5 rectors and a bishop of the Church of Ireland at his gravesite.
Wow. I could talk to you all night long, but then you wouldn't have any voice.
That's true, too.
Damon, thank you so much. I truly appreciate it. What a gift you are, certainly. Thank you.
It's time to join the Tahibo Tea Club. Tahibo Tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo Tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Tahibo Tea is available for only $34.95 per pound, plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Dial 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com. All orders ship immediately the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222. That number again, 818-883-7222. Or buy online at drinksupertea.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Are you a stock or options trader looking for real trading strategies that you can use immediately? Hi, my name is Scott Bauer, CEO of Prosper Trading Academy, and I'm on a mission to become the number one options coach in America. I'm a former vice president at Goldman Sachs. I have over 25 years of options trading experience, and right now, I'm giving away my most famous options guide with over 20 unique options strategies that I use every day for free. You can't buy this guide anywhere. To claim your free options trading guide, simply call 855-844-9702 now and mention my name, Scott Bauer, and we will rush you the guide. Call 855-844-9702 and someone from my options team will help you get this guide in your inbox as quickly as possible. Call 855-844-9702 now and start learning to trade the right way. Simply call 855-844-9702. Prosper with options.
Stocks and options trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
I'm here with George Hughes, and my mind is blown. I'm thinking about getting a border collie,
yes.
And I'm also thinking about Pete and the way they do it here in Ireland. So we're going to talk to...
The old-fashioned name is Turf.
Turf.
Yes.
Yes, just like the horses riding on the turf.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's just a particular type of I don't know, how would you call it? It's not a soil. It's actually something apart, and we call it turf. It can be harvested for use, and it has been down the centuries in Ireland, for use as a means of heating the home, and the boiling the water and generally keeping everybody warm and that.
But and the area where we are, you can't use machines, and why is that?
Yeah, because it's called an SAC. It's a special area of conservation, and the government or the EU have put a ruling on it whereby you're not allowed to cut this. The little insects that are in the ground and whatnot are more important, it would seem, than the people. So you have got a special dispensation. You can go in and cut it in the old-fashioned Irish way with a slane, a special implement that's used for cutting turf. You cannot put in the modern machine now that goes in, tramples all over the bog, and causes damage to those little creatures that are in the bog and the birds that are nesting on the bog area that nest on the ground.
So in using the slane and doing it that way and families getting pieces, little chunks of area that they were allotted,
yes.
How much would a typical family use?
A typical family would use maybe what we would call a 10x6 trailer load of turf. They would probably use 3 to 4 of those in the year. That would be the equivalent of 100 bags of turf. That if you bag the turf, you would probably have, 1,000 bags of turf. So each family would make sure that they had more than enough to sustain them for the winter. You would cut, if you thought you'd use 4 trailer loads of turf, you would probably cut 5 or 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what would that go for if you were buying it in a store?
If you were buying it in the store, the bag of turf would cost you €4. The trailer load of turf would probably, with 140 bags on it, would cost you €350 delivered to your store where you were putting it at home.
Wow. And there's something else that's very unique about you. You are known as the dog, I'm going to call you the dog guru, because you take these border collies and train them, and we're talking about the sheep because we're on a sheep farm.
Yes, yeah, you're on a big sheep farm, one of the biggest, well, probably in the highest, in probably the top 15 farms in Ireland, here in Glenteen Farm, and they would be running maybe around 650 breeding ewes, and we have 3 border collies, all homebred. We have Holly and Liz and Jill, and Holly is the matriarch herself, and Jill is 2 years old, Liz is about 5 years old, and they work on the farm. They're highly trained, highly skilled sheepdogs for collecting and driving big numbers of sheep.
Wow, and so when you train the sheepdogs, what are the directions? What do you? I can't even imagine that.
What we do with the dog, we start off the dog in a small area with a small number of sheep, maybe 4, 5, 6, no more than 6 sheep. And we train the dog, we put the dog walking on the left-hand side, and we say, come by, Holly. Keep saying come by and walking to the left, and the next thing you see the dog wanting to go from you on this come by, which is go to the left. You switch the dog to the right hand side and we say away, Holly, and you keep walking on the right and the sheep are moving from you, and the dog is the next thing the dog starts to go and go right. The dog is on a lead, and then when you see the dog inclined to do it, you let the lead go and the dog goes off around the sheep in a small area. And when they learn that, then you say, come back into foot and put him, come by. And when he starts going left and right, then you can take him out of the small area and move him into a bigger area. And slowly but surely, the dog is learning to go a distance. He can go 300, 400, 500 yards eventually.
How do they know when they're finished, when the day is done? And
when the day is done, you just say, that'll do. And the dog stops working.
Oh, I'd love to say that to my husband. That'll do.
Yes.
That'll
and
do.
That he'd come back and do what he's told.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what if you say, that'll do, Holly, or Liz or Jill, and they come straight back to your foot.
Wow.
Yeah, and then when you have them trained on the verbal command, we switch to a whistle command. So you pick a whistle sound, and for the left and for the right, and you... What you do is then, in order to get the dog on to the whistle sound, you give the verbal command and the whistle command at the same time. Verbal, whistle, verbal, whistle. And the next thing you'll find that the dog is moving even better on the whistle command and you can leave out the verbal command, and it saves the old guy himself from bawling and roaring. And also, it's given the perfect sound every time to the dog, whereas if you're given the voice command and the dog is doing something wrong, you're bellowing like a bull. So the dog is getting a more even command each time.
How many dogs do you think you've trained in your lifetime?
Oh, my goodness, I'd have to say hundreds of dogs. You know.
Hundreds?
Well, I would say so, yes, because I've been training for... Oh, my goodness, I've been training for 20-odd years.
When you were a kid, did you know you'd end up loving this and doing this?
I didn't, but I always had a hankering. I was born in a little town called Newport. I didn't have enough of grass to grow an onion. But I had a hankering for farming all the time. And when I would look out the window in the morning after getting up, I would see the neighbor's cows and another neighbor's bullocks or females, and I always had a hankering for it. And then I met my wife, and when we decided to get married, they said, you can have the little farm along with the girl. So when I got the wife, I got the farm along with her.
Wow, was it hard to learn the profession, though, because you didn't grow up with it?
No, but any time ever I could get work when I was a youngster, I worked on a farm. And I worked on a farm after school and for summer holidays with a guy, and he had no dog. So George had to do the running. So I said to him, John, I says, I'm going to have to get a dog, I says. So I got a pup from an uncle of mine and trained it up, and it was a super dog.
Wow.
Yeah, and his name was Glenn, and when I was leaving him to go on to bigger things, the dog wanted to come along with me. He was so fond. We had got such a relationship, the two of us. And eventually he did leave home, the dog did, from the farm. And when I looked in my shed at the back of the house, the dog was there waiting for me. So I had to have him take him back again because I didn't have any work. I was going on to do interior decoration and painting and that. So there was no work for the dog. So he went back to the farm again. And then he settled in. He says, well, it's going to have to change. And he stayed with John for so long then.
Wow. And so these dogs become like family. So it's probably hard to lose them.
It is. You get a very, very a huge bond with the dog. Especially, you see, when you're able to go out to a field, walk up the center of the field, and have the dog go right or go left, and all the sheep are landed at your feet. You know, if you look for 10 men to do that, you'd have a lot of bad language before you'd have them all landed at your feet, where the dog will do it. Just literally because he wants to do it.
Boy, no kidding.
Yeah, he just really wants to please. And he would work himself to death to please you.
And the sheep, this is a rhythm of this area. The sheep know it. They know the dog, they're herded, they
know the power of the dog, you see. The power of the dog is in the eye of the dog. And the dog is able to command his sheep with his eyes. And if you've seen our dogs out there working, even when they're not working and they're left sitting down there while there's a different one working, they never take their eyes off the sheep. And every move the sheep make, the dog's eyes travel with the movement. They want to go out and stop it going that way or this way. So it's just a natural ability they have. And there's something that you couldn't buy in a dog. We wouldn't sell our dogs for £10,000 here, because you had no business going up the hill without them.
Wow.
So they're worth a small fortune.
What do you hope, this is being broadcast to Americans, what do you hope Americans, what do you want them to know about this area? Why should they come and visit?
Well, I would say that they would see something that they have never realized was in it, that we are so unspoiled here. We are so undersold here in this area, in Glen Keane and in the Lewisburg area, compared to, say, the Killarneys, which are lovely in their own right. But they're so commercialized compared to here. We're something to behold here, and we would love to see them come and visit us, and we give them, every one of them, a key of the meal of fortune, and that's 100,000 welcomes.
100,000 welcomes.
Yeah, key of the meal of fortune. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So do you speak Irish, Gaelic?
I spoke Irish fluently when I was young, going to school a long time ago, but I have a little bit of Irish now. I can have little sayings in Irish, and I have I can speak to you Caid Míle Fáilte, Tá Fáilte Rath, which means you're welcome, you know. And Caid Míle Fáilte, as I just said, is 100,000 welcomes, you know. I'll just say, you'd say something like that's to say, it's an old Irish goodwill message that I hope you'll all be in as good a health and happiness this time again.
That's a perfect sentiment to end on, George. What a pleasure. Thank you
for
spending time.
It's been a pleasure with you.
Thank you.
And I welcome everybody from America. All that can come, come and see me. Georgie Porgy is the nickname. Yeah.
It's time to start drinking Tahibo Tea. Tahibo Tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo Tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Every week, someone calls in with the story of another miraculous recovery. Order your Tahibo Tea now for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Call today 818-883-7222. Again, 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. All orders ship the same day. Call now 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com.